passage far from theoretical. When one is ministering in a culture where witches are actively praying against you, and a horse's head is placed on a stake across from your church to cast a spell on it, there's no room for platitudes or vague spiritual answers to pressing difficult questions. Much satanic opposition, however, is extraordinarily subtle and has no dramatic manifestations. For this reason, most of the book will deal with the everyday schemes of the evil one in a forthright, biblical, and relevant manner. The book is divided into four sections: Spiritual Warfare 101, What Every Believer Needs to Know; Spiritual Warfare 201, How to Prepare Yourself for Spiritual Battle; Spiritual Warfare 301, How to Do Battle with the Enemy and Win; Spiritual Warfare 401, Deliverance from Demonic Influence. As I've had the privilege of teaching this material around the country, I have seen firsthand what God can and will do when we understand our position in Christ, put on the full armor of God, and know what it looks like to stand firm, taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. 2 Corinthians 10:5. Section 1, Spiritual Warfare 101, What Every Believer Needs to Know. There are two equal and opposite errors into which our race can fall about the devils. One is to disbelieve in their existence, the other is to believe and to feel an excessive and unhealthy interest in them. C.S. Lewis. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might. Put on the full armor of God, so that you will be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Ephesians 6, 10-12. 1. Why you struggle. The warnings God gave me through friends, mentors, and leaders at Santa Cruz Bible Church were not in vain. Within a year, a number of incidents occurred that let me know we were certainly in a spiritual struggle. I'll never forget preaching on a Sunday night and hearing bizarre sounds coming from the back of the auditorium. Soon there were more than strange sounds. A man was walking down the aisle as he shouted and screamed. At first, I continued to speak, hoping the ushers would be able to handle the situation. But as he walked toward me, our eyes met. I saw a wildness that I can't quite describe. He had not only disrupted the service and my message, but made such a scene that only those who witnessed it could believe it. What shocked me was how unsurprised the people in the church were. Apparently, this had happened before. Three or four ushers got to this man before he got to me, and I was informed later in a debriefing session that this individual, as far as they could tell, was demonized. Blasphemies against God, the church, and my message spewed from his mouth that night, and it took three or four men to restrain him and usher him out of the auditorium. If I didn't believe in spiritual warfare before, I certainly did then. I got an introduction I would never forget. That's just one example among many of the reality of the invisible war. There will be a lot of examples in this book that come from my time in Santa Cruz simply because the invisible war is so much more visible there. But it's raging everywhere else on this planet, too. It may be behind the scenes. In fact, it probably is. But in your house, your church, and your community, there is a violent conflict between kingdoms. We're on the winning side, but we have to be aware of the fight. We have to understand spiritual warfare. Ephesians 6, 10-20 is the central teaching in the entire New Testament on spiritual warfare, and it begins with two commands: be strong in the Lord and put on the full armor of God. The general command is, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might, verse 10. People who suddenly find out that they are in the midst of a cosmic conflict often have one of two extreme reactions, fight or flight. Ephesians 6 has an answer to both extremes. Be strong in the strength of God's might. We may not know much about this battle when we first realize it exists, but we can at least know that it's not about our ability to muster up our own strength. That's good news if you want to avoid the battle because of your own weakness. Your strength, or lack of it, isn't really the issue. And it's also good news if you have the urge to rush into battle under your own abilities. You won't have to run from it when you realize how overpowered you are. There is power available, and it's the greatest power in the universe. The only way to win this war is to be strong in the Lord, in the strength that Paul spent most of Ephesians assuring us is already ours. This general command to be strong in God's power applies to every believer at all times. This is not optional for a Christian. There is nothing in this passage or in the New Testament to indicate that we can dismiss ourselves from the battle, not without suffering great harm or missing out on substantial blessings. If I were to paraphrase this verse, it would be something like this.